Well, it is that time where we get to check in with the indomitable Jean-Jacques Cornish. It is called Africanalysis. If you're not familiar with what we do in Africanalysis, we get to do a little whip around the continent. We don't get to stop everywhere because there's a lot more happening in Africa than even we can bring to you. But we're doing as good a job as we can and as you will find anywhere, thanks to the knowledge and expertise of our main man, JJ Cornish, who this morning is ready to regale us with all kinds of stories, good and bad, from across this great continent of ours. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, who are also involved all over Africa. And if you have business to do in Africa, you need to be talking to them. Jean-Jacques, how are you?
Bonjour. I'm immensely well, thanks. All the better for being asked.
I'm delighted. I'm delighted to see you. And I was very worried that you don't have any strange new diseases that have broken out in the Congo by any chance, do you?
No, happily not. Happily not. I don't know if I can say that for everybody. I notice a lot of people are wearing more betadine than late. But look at your television set, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right. So let's talk about mpox, monkeypox. They're trying to make it sound more palatable to people. With 17,000 cases and 500 deaths. Apparently, this was a big talking subject. This is a big subject of discussion at the SADC summit in Harare this weekend.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, let's not forget that 2 years ago we had, and that was clade 2, that strain. This is a particular clade 1B, which is particularly vociferous and easier to catch, apparently. But 2002, we had 95,000 cases in 115 countries. Now, what experts are saying is that this is not COVID. We have for a long time had a vaccine against it, and it is one of those, it's fatal in about something like 4% of cases, and generally you're improved after about, 3 to 4 weeks. But it's particularly nasty. You get these pustules all over you, and you get flu-like symptoms. And it's really nasty. Of the cases we mentioned in the 16 countries, well, that you mentioned in the intro, 90% of them are in the DRC, and that is where it was last time round. But the thing is, what the World Health Organization is saying, and they've declared this a medical emergency of international proportions, saying that don't, to the wealthy countries, don't try to hoard all the vaccines. We're going to need vaccines all over Africa. There are about 250,000 of them available, and we're going to need 10 million by the end of the year. But the company, which is Bavarian Nordic, is saying, well, we can make this. Sure, we can make it. But we're waiting for the orders. We can't just start producing it. We need something that's going to make it, in a sense, worth our while, make it viable for us to do. But European travelers are rushing to get vaccinated, and European governments are issuing travel warnings, which they do rather flimsily at times. But, you know, they err on the side of caution, trying to protect their people. And so here we have it, another nasty disease, another virus spreading. But the point I made is that it is not COVID. It's not as deadly as COVID. Plus, it works on skin-to-skin transmission. It's not a droplet type of transmission. So, yes, we need to take precautions, but we don't need to be as worried as we were with COVID. And please God, we don't have to close down countries.
Well, you see, I think this is the point, and you raised some very important issues around this. Once bitten, twice shy about COVID, which was a non-starter. I mean, we know that there were people who died, but it wasn't nearly the thing that they made it out to be. And obviously, governments shut down, particularly paranoid Europeans and North Americans, ground the economy of the world to a halt. It was a disaster. And I think that having happened just 4 short years ago, so many people are wary and suspicious of when governments start issuing orders that there's this disease and we must look out. On the other hand, the Congo is also the scene of probably the scariest disease we've ever seen in my lifetime, which is Ebola. You remember that? Which was also no laughing matter. And Ebola is not the kind of disease you trifle with, because you pretty much tickets if you get it. I mean, you start things like bleeding, ears and eyes starts happening, and then it's really, you know, downhill from there. And there's not a lot worse you can get than that. So
measles in the Congo is absolutely of disastrous proportions. They had an outbreak last year, and essentially the health services in the Congo don't manage as well as they should. So, you know, it's something we need to take precautions, get a vaccination if you're traveling. I think they've had cases in Sweden. They've had cases in Pakistan. And today we hear of a case in Thailand. But these are all travelers coming back from Africa. So take precautions, but keep a cool head.
Yeah, I think that's very, very sage advice. So Jean-Jacques, let's just talk about something else that's quite interesting. That same summit showed SADC to be the most stable of the African regional groupings. I mean, again, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king, but this is something we could probably be quite proud of. It's also the member with the most potential in some people's opinions, although I suppose the DRC is the one that's causing the biggest headache at the moment. What can you tell us about, first of all, SADC, and then the African regional groupings in general, just to give us a big picture overview of how that all works?
Well, it's 44 years old now, and you know, SADC used to be the front line states against apartheid, and then became other things until finally when South Africa came in, it became SADC. It was always sort of eclipsed in terms of operational ability by the ECOWAS, Economic Community of West African States, but that has gone pear-shaped because of what has been happening in the Sahel. Now, SADC, you know, a lot of people are very cynical about it, but essentially it started with a free trade. It has started a free trade agreement between COMESA, which is the community of East African states, the East African community, EAC, and SADC are all in this free trade thing. And anything you can do to reduce levies and promote intra-African trade is a very good thing. We have Angola working very hard on the DRC. João Lourenço, the president, went to see Paul Kagame, went to Rwanda to see him and said, please stop supporting the M23 rebels and let's get peace in the DRC. Now, what they reported at the summit in Harare, interesting that they've done that, because for some time they've been railing against the sanctions against Harare imposed by the West for stealing elections and for human rights deficiencies. So it's interesting that they went to Harare to do this. But we have now the Andry Rajoelina, the Madagascar president. He's going to be a chair next year when Madagascar then will host the summit, and I'll be hard-pressed to give that one a miss because I love going to Madagascar. The Tanzanian President Hassan is to chair the SADC organ on peace, security, and politics, which is, it's a sort of like a mini security council within SADC. So they work very hard, and what they did report was progress on Lesotho, which has had its political strife in recent years, and SADC has intervened directly. And of course, in Mozambique, the SADC military mission to Mozambique has just pulled out. But things they say are stabilizing slowly in Mozambique. We do have the ISIS effectively up there, people beheading people and that sort of thing, and stopping the exploitation of the oil resources up there. So we've had grown up problems within the region, but we've worked very hard on them. But the DRC, and where they had a ceasefire last week, but M23 is not observing it in all cases. They say the areas that are under its control and will remain that way, and they're behaving as though they are the bosses there. So it was a relatively a good summit, and as I pointed out, of all the regional groupings, COMESA, the Maghreb African Union, East African Community, West Economic Community of West African States, these are all countries, these are all regions that look with some envy at what SADC is achieving.
JJ, I'm just curious because I don't know a lot about these regional groupings. Are they geographical? Are they? Is there a commonality of language? Is it a trade arrangement that they usually are brought together by? Like, what's the overriding principle that makes these happen? Because surely the purpose of something like the AU is to dissolve those differences and rather create some talk shop where these leaders can get together and make progress on a continental level.
Well, the AU is so very big that it's broken itself into regional sort of, has a regional sort of boundaries to when they agree on, for example, selecting people for offices, you know, they work that on a regional basis and they rotate its responsibilities and privileges, as it were, on a regional basis. But the regional groupings don't conform exactly to the regional boundaries created by the AU. So there's that sort of dichotomy. But nevertheless, in every case, when the matters are too much for the African Union to deal with, they're looked at regionally. And yes, it's about trade. In many cases, well, SADC can't be accused of being an Anglophone group because it has Lusophone, French, and Anglophone components. But East African, the Economic Community of West African States is almost, no, it has Nigeria, obviously. So that is Anglophone and Francophone. None of them are exclusively on a language basis. And it's an interesting question you ask because, you know, I've always maintained the real divide in Africa is not sub-Sahara and north of Sahara. It's about Francophone and Anglophone countries. And we see that in Cameroon. Where people are actually fighting and dying on language grounds. But so it's that divide. If we could bridge that, we would grow better as a continent. And I know when last we spoke, I was talking about the potential of the DRC, which, you know, again, I will emphasize, if the DRC was made to work properly and could exploit all its resources, physical, and logistical resources, the whole of Africa would benefit enormously.
Well, I can only hope that your words reach the right ears, because it would make things a lot easier. I'm sure that there are thousands of companies and individuals who are willing to trade across borders. If we could just get the political leaders in those countries and those regions and those border areas to cooperate instead of bicker and bind and fight over things like language and religion and, you know, trade rules. There is some good news, and I'm pleased because you usually finish us off with some good news in Africa Analysis. Today we're hearing good news from Sierra Leone.
Well, let me just tell you that Sierra Leone, of course, you know, was the land of the blood diamonds. It had this 11-year civil war, which left more than 120,000 people dead. It has on an environmental level more tree cover being chopped down than any other country on the planet. 35% of total tree cover since year 2000, and 14% of the primary forests, you know, the humid primary forests, have been chopped down. So they have real difficulties. But what they've come up with, and this is very interesting, they've had a massive heat wave this summer, temperatures between 30 and 40 degrees, but with humidity so high, it was made to feel at least 10 degrees higher than that. So what they've come up with is heat reflective roofing, and these sheets are made from plastic, and they've been put on houses, and they gauge the temperature, monitor the temperature, and it seems to reduce it by at least 10 degrees. So it's made life tolerable for many people. And this has gone to informal settlements. So in other words, to the slums, let's not mince our words. And about 35% of those will be given these reflective sheets in the next few years. And, you know, that reduction is going to be fantastic, because they're fighting uphill battles against all sorts of other things. If life can be made a bit more comfortable, that they can sit down and concentrate on getting the work done, that's a good thing.
Amazing. All right. Very happy to hear that. So some technological and construction leadership roles being assumed here by, of all places, Sierra Leone. Good to hear. JJ, it's always good to speak to you. I think it's probably time for us to do one of those close-ups on one of these countries, and I'm sure that there are plenty to choose from. But we were talking on my other show today about Madagascar, and I do think there are a lot of people who don't know terribly much about Madagascar, and perhaps you can fill us in. You did mention it in the first story this morning.
Yes, I've been there now as an election observer a number of times, and you know, many of the Malgash, of course, are hiding out. Well, have hidden out in South Africa. So yeah, I'll probably look at my census to become the next SADC chair, a country run by a DJ, by the way. So yeah, it's very interesting. I'll look at that for you.
Rubble or banana, right?
Yeah. Yes. He was the yogurt king, and he was for a lot of the time. The president is Andry Rajoelina. Rajoel, they call him. They shorten their names because they've got the most extraordinarily long names. But he, as I say, was a DJ, and then there's Harry Rajman Ariman Pianini. I'm the only journalist who could say his name at one point. He won the presidency in one of the elections I observed, when both Rajoel and the Yogurt King were not allowed to run. But he only lasted one term. But lots to talk about with that, and it's a country well worth seeing. You know, people often ask me, what are the countries that you would go back to? You know, what are the countries you would spend your own money to go and see? And certainly Madagascar is one of those.
I like it. I think we'll do that next up. Thank you very much, JJ Cornish, and African Analysis this week brought to you, as always, by the Johannesburg Business School. Check them out. All the details are in the description below.